Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. My guest, Matt Adams, host analyst for NBC, The Golf Channel, New York Times bestselling author, The Golf Round I'll Never Forget. Love that book, by the way. And host of Fairways of Life Radio, which airs Monday through Fridays, 8 a.m. on Fairways of Life apps, website, and 24/7 on demand on podcasts in every major audio platform around the world. The ubiquitous Matt Adams, welcome to Sports Interview.
Hello, Ann. How have you been?
I've been good, thank you, in this crazy, uncertain time that we're all going through right now.
For sure.
And let's start with that, because it really has been such a strange time, to say the least, with this pandemic. Yet golf has really led the way in the sports world, Matt, with their safety measures, their testing protocols, social distancing aspects of the sport itself. Obviously, golf is great at that. But how do you think this 2020 golf season will be viewed in history when we look back on it?
I definitely think it's going to be an asterisk. I think that there's the only thing that we can compare it to is the period during the Second World War, when there was a suspension of major championships and play at large. The tour was suspended for years during that time, until such time as, you know, Byron Nelson had his run and at the end of it, and then everyone started coming back and making the tour as we know it today. That was post-World War II, was when we start to get into the tours we know. You're talking about Snead, Hogan, leading into Palmer, which leads into Nicklaus, which takes us in earnest right up to the present day. So I think that's the only way that we can look at it, is to say that this is an aberration. I mean, what of the Open? There's not even going to be a 2020 Open on the record books, at least with the other three majors. There will be. You'll have to dig into it a little bit 100 years from now to realize that they weren't held in their regular time spot. But aside from that, you know, aside from the professional tours, what's interesting, Ann, is that on the amateur level, the 99.99% that I like to say, that where I worked for years on that side of the game, golf is absolutely booming right now. And yeah, it is for many of the reasons that you've already outlined, that they realized pretty quickly that if you look at the charts of the most dangerous activities that you can engage in, going to a bar, going, say, to a concert hall or a club, going to a large gathering where people are close together, even if they're singing or speaking loudly, it's very dangerous, especially if those people obviously are not wearing masks or not covered. So as a result of that, they looked at golf and said, wait a minute, you're talking about people being outside. They are, by the very nature of the game, generally social distanced. If you're conscious of it, you can be even more so on the mark of the same. And they realized that golf is a great sport for a variety of different reasons. Well, golf right now, as you and I are speaking, is absolutely booming. Where you are in the Northeast, it is up over 15-17%. Where I am in the Southeast, it's bumping on 20% up year over year. That even if you take into account the weeks and in some cases months that golf was not allowed to be played at the height of the lockdown, it's still up for the year. So it's absolutely remarkable. And in a very bizarre way, I think golf, almost on every level, can actually come out of this being the beneficiary of people realizing that maybe what they thought golf was previously is not tremendously on mark, because they gave it a try and they found it to be a healthy endeavor and something that's a lot of fun.
That's right. The ironies are unbelievable. I was just playing Gardner Spey over the weekend, and Lee Nutley, the director of golf, the pro over there, said his rounds are up 50%. This Oof. Time, this from last year. So it's just, and everywhere you go, you hear that and you see that, and families are playing. Kids don't have camps to go to. So, you know, mom and dad are taking out the kids. They're learning the game. They're taking golf lessons. The junior programs are thriving. It's great to see, really.
It's fantastic to see. It's what the game needs. It's, you know, on the equipment side of what I do, the big concern was, because you know as well as anybody, that equipment goes in cycles. And we went through a period where those cycles were getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And it was to drive new product through the marketplace, down the pipeline, so that they could show what they wanted to from a quarterly performance and to enhance stocks. Now that those product cycles have started to spread out again, because the retail distribution chains were saying, wait a minute, you're loading us up with this product, which we then summarily have to discount 6 months later. And consumers got smart and they said, well, I'm not going to buy the new driver now. I'm just going to wait 3 to 6 months and it's going to be discounted by 20-30%. And then I'll pick it up then. So this, with all of it happened in 2020, the big question was, will we see new product introduced at all? In other words, to back up a product that was the latest, greatest that we were introduced to at the PGA Merchandise Show, or will they wait until a whole nother season? Will they actually skip a whole cycle? Because of everything kicking off again, because of things are moving, because product is moving, I think we're going to see the new introductions of product on a fairly regular cycle to what we would have seen regardless of what's happening with the pandemic. So even that is a very interesting development. And if you're a person that loves the new introduction of product and loves to see the new technology, whether you engage in it at that time or just like to see it, like I love to see what they're doing with new stuff. I think you're going to see it on a fairly regular schedule, which was very much in doubt only a few weeks ago.
Sure. You wonder if people are really spending the money on the next best putter or driver, you know, and during this time, I think, you know, they're playing golf, but are they really spending the extra dollars to buy new equipment?
Yeah, what we're seeing right now is that equipment sales are going quite well. What's interesting is that how it's going quite well. I'll take one company, for example, Ben Hogan Golf. Great name, right? Lineage back to sure. 1953, founded by the namesake Ben Hogan himself. It went through its ups and downs. In 2017, the current ownership group put together the structure of what Ben Hogan Golf is right now. What it is right now, and it is direct to the consumer, so that they're coming out with all the latest and greatest in terms of technology. They're one of the sponsors of the Fairways Lecture. Latest and greatest in terms of technology, latest and greatest in terms of the artistry that they're doing, micro manufacturing, one at a time, obviously, but based on order. But the consumer's saving 40-50% because there's no retailer in the middle. They cannot keep product in stock. Now, whether you liken that to just a business growth on their part, which you certainly hope that that is the case, I can't, in my mind, separate it from what's going on with the pandemic, where people are going, I'm able to play golf again, whether it's 50% up where you played, or the average of the Northeast up 15-17%, or the rest of the country up massive percentages as well. Whatever the reason is, people want to go out and play with the latest and greatest. And I do believe that's got to do with the pandemic, both in physical activity that they're engaged in and a mental perspective that you're taking to it, where they go, you know what? We just learned that you only go around once, and crazy things can happen to upend your life that you think is so set in stone that nothing's going to change. Things can change. So I'm not waiting. I'm going to go out and get that set of club or driver, whatever it is right now. I think that's part of the mentality.
Let's go back to what you said about the pro game, and that this season you think will have an asterisk by it. Obviously, they canceled the Open Championship for this season. We have the PGA yep. Championship coming up. We have the U.S. Open. They just announced there will be no spectators at the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. No spectators, obviously, at the PGA Championship. You know, the schedule has been totally rearranged. No spectators. COVID-19 testing. Very controlled environment. It just, what a year. Yet, going back to golf leading the way, you know, I really think, you know, the golf industry has set a very positive example when you look at all these other sports that are trying to get out there to do the same.
And I hope they do the same. And I hope it's successful for them as well, with, you know, basketball getting back underway again the last few days, and baseball is underway again. Not many games in, but they're underway. Hockey's getting ready in earnest as well. So it's exciting to see. It makes me think that, and I guess from a writer's perspective here, is that sport has always been in some way a metaphor for, or at least a reflection of, life itself. The triumph, the tragedy, everything that goes with it, the joyfulness, the euphoria, the coming together as a constituency to cheer on a team, sometimes as a family, sometimes the marked contrast within those same confines in terms of where allegiances lie. So sport for us is important. When you look at what Michael Murphy wrote in his 1971 golf fiction, which was brilliant, the best-selling golf fiction of all time, called Golf and the Kingdom, he called sport Western meditation. It means so much to our mindset, to our psyche, to our sense of where balance is in our world, maybe in our universe. So the fact that golf came back first, the fact that golf used all those things that we were talking about earlier, the reality of the game and how it naturally lends itself towards social distancing, if you please, and towards a healthy engagement. And that with no roadmap, with no textbook whatsoever, they were able to put together a means of bringing back an entire league so that we at home could enjoy the sport as we used to. Granted, there are no fans there, and that has an impact. It's more fun when the holes are lined with people. But at the end of the day, we're still seeing great competition. I mean, if you look at what happened last week when Michael Thompson won, the amount of emotion that he had when he was so steady down the stretch, but the emotion that he had after that victory, his first since 2013, that was real and very enjoyable and very engaging. And we've got this coming week coming up, we've got a major, the first one of the calendar year in the PGA Championship. So for so many reasons, I think it's been noble, and I think it's been a great effort by the game of golf. I'm not saying it was perfect. They're learning as they go, and they've admitted that to us. But the fact that what they're doing for their business structure and for our enjoyment as fans, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
I agree with you. Let's talk about several players, Matt, starting with Tiger Woods. To date, we've only seen him at the Memorial, where he finished tied for 40th, his only tournament so far since February. He skipped Memphis. And, you know, he says he's doing what he thinks is best to prepare for the PGA Championship. And again, in an ironic way, you know, this pandemic has, I really feel, affected Tiger so much. Do you think it's good or bad? I mean, he hasn't been really practicing outside of his backyard and, you know, the medalist, wherever he is down in Florida. But how do you, what are your thoughts about Tiger? It just seems like, you know, we're not seeing much of him. He's totally cut back on his schedule, obviously, for physical reasons. But what are your thoughts about Tiger at this point?
My thoughts with Tiger in general is that he is the classic enigma wrapped in a mystery and drizzled with riddle. And much of that is by his own style and personality. Tiger has never liked revealing details of who he is. Now, whether that led to, you know, his kind of social downfall in 2009, because he was so secretive in terms of and so controlling in terms of how he and his team controlled his image and the information that he dispensed, that once it all hit the fan, everybody ran with it, you know, like madmen. You know, maybe that was part of it. I don't know. But even if you look at it, well, the last time we saw Tiger and he was doing his flashy interview was actually Rex Hoggard from Golf Channel was asking the questions. And he said, well, you know, what are you going to do about getting more reps? And Tiger said, reps or competitive reps? And Rex came back and said, competitive reps. And Tiger came back and said, well, I definitely need more reps. And so that was it. That was the information that we got in terms of when are you going to play, where are you going to play, and what. Before the pandemic, when Tiger couldn't play at Bay Hill, when Tiger couldn't play at the Players, we all, and I think rightfully so, were worried because it seemed like a sign that the surgically repaired back or any one of the other areas that he's had multiple surgeries on his body, something was wrong. Something had flared up again. He has come back continually and said, look, it's a day-by-day issue. Some days it's good, some days it isn't good. You know, look at what he did at the Zozo. It looked like he beat. Look at what he did at the President's Cup. He quite physically could not be beat. He was playing so well. And so we all had hope. But then we saw what happened in the spring. He had weeks, months of healing to go through in the pandemic. And we thought, okay, well, he's going to come back again. Everyone had high hopes. He came back and he had one day when he shot a 76 Memorial and when he said the back was flaring up. But even outside of that, he didn't play well. It was mediocre at best, and one could say there was a lot of rust, at least in terms of what we saw from Tiger Woods. So how taking this past week, this week off from competing, will put him in a position to be better able to compete at the PGA Championship in Harding Park, where traditionally it's going to be cool in Northern California and along the Pacific Ocean, I don't know. I guess I don't have high hopes for the prospects of Tiger Woods. I hate to say for my sake and that of every other fan of the game of golf at the PGA Championship, because the last time we saw him, we saw two things. we saw a tremendous amount of competitive rust. Two, we saw the back flare-up specifically that kept him, as he was saying, from completing his swing. So for those two reasons, I think notwithstanding the euphoria that surrounds Tiger, I don't know what he's going to say in the next few days if and when he addresses the media and Tiger comes in and says, I feel great, been practicing at home, the back is not a problem, I know how to win majors, I've won 15 of them, I'm ready to go, and we all get swept up in the euphoria and we all say, maybe this is going to be number 16, he marches that much closer to Jack Nicklaus. But with everything that we've seen so far in the real lens of reality, I just don't see it happening.
Oh, I don't either. I mean, he's just rusty. He just hasn't been able to play. He's become probably more honest and open lately than we've ever heard Tiger Woods, because he, you know, is constantly referring to the fact that he is getting old. He's not young anymore. His body is breaking down and continues to break down. So I think we're obviously, it seems like we're seeing Tiger on his last leg, so to speak. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But I know, you know, putting wise, he did say that he's been playing, you know, in Florida, playing on Bermuda greens and not seeing breaks. And, you know, that's greatly affected his putting. But I mean, it's so much more than that. It's basically his body breaking down and he's admitting to his age.
Yeah, I think you're 100% correct on all of that. What's interesting where you said that Tiger is more revealing than he's been in the past, it tends to go in a pattern, though. The pre-tournament Tiger is pretty much a traditional Tiger. The message he's going to give you is that he's never felt better, he's never felt stronger, he's never been more prepared. I'm paraphrasing, but that's generally
sure.
It. It's the post-tournament Tiger that is, that especially if things don't go well, where Tiger kind of throws his palms up to the air and says, well, what are you guys expecting? I had major back surgery.
Right.
Now, you know, because of the way that the game is played, whenever you're communicating from a journalist perspective with Tiger or Phil, there are rules to that game. And the basic rules, whether the public knows this or not, is you play the game that they want to play, because if you push too hard, if you delve too deep, if you're in any way accusatory or rude with the manner in which you address these legends, you essentially will get shut down. The next time that, because there's only so many questions that can be asked in that setting, and your hand up is not going to be one that's picked the next time. That's just, it's the unspoken rule. And I know I'm revealing inside baseball to you. So that's the reason why, even in the exchange with Tiger, in my opinion, which was, when Tiger said, you mean competitive reps or reps? And Rex said competitive reps. And Tiger said, I definitely need reps. Okay. That's the reason why you didn't hear a follow-up by multiple journalists at that point going, Tiger, could you define what you just said? What did you mean? Reps. Does that mean at home? Or you're actually going to go out and compete on tour and get yourself ready with a, you know, scorecard and pencil in hand versus zipping around a golf course in a golf cart. So it's a very interesting dynamic with Tiger Woods. And I'm a massive fan of Tiger being a part of the game because of what he does in terms of firing up enthusiasm and the ratings that he brings to it and all the rest from the media side of the game. There's a definite benefit when he's there, but there's also a great deal of complexity as to who he is.
Oh, absolutely. And you're so right about what you can and cannot ask Tiger Woods and who they pick to ask these questions. It is very skewed. And that's a whole other subject that we can talk about one day. But not just with Tiger Woods. It's just who you are and who they choose to ignore as far as asking questions and picking those to ask questions. But that's a whole other thing. Bryson DeChambeau. In a matter of a few months, Matt Adams, he purposely gained over 40 pounds. I don't know anybody who purposely gains that much weight. And he's just bombing the ball off the tee, leading the tour in driving distance. Now, in my opinion, he's bordering on being too heavy. And I, for the life of me, don't know how somebody too heavy can get that club head speed up to where he needs to have it to bomb the ball off the tee like he is doing it. So is there a chance he could get, because he admits he's eating just unlimited amounts of food. It's just, to me, it's almost like a health issue, too. To gain that much weight in a short period of time is not healthy. But look at his driving distance. So it's kind of like a two-edged sword there for me.
You know what it sounds like in this conversation, Ann LaGorie? It sounds like you and I are sitting around in the grill room as a couple of parents and having this conversation, because I think what happens with Bryson is that we all forget that he's 26 years old. My two boys who are home because there's no school right now, obviously, with the lockdown, the pandemic, at 20 and 22 are drinking their protein shakes and lifting their weights and going running and flexing in the mirror and doing all the stuff that these young guys do. Bryson is a professional athlete, even though he's got the image of being, you know, the almost a rocket scientist, if you get right down to it. And he's got all that image. I get it. I realize that he's a very smart guy, but he's still a 26-year-old man. And I think part of what's going on here is that he's got a lot of attributes in his character that remind me of Phil Mickelson. He loves the spotlight.
Right.
He loves to be the center of attention. He loves to tell you what his theories are. And the beauty of Bryson DeChambeau is that when we hear it, we may scratch our head. We may roll our eyes. We may look at each other and go, you know what, Ann, I don't know if I'm buying that. It doesn't matter if we buy it. He's buying it. So it's working for him. With Bryson DeChambeau, if you look at, you know, everyone's giving all the credit to this massive weight game and strength training in terms of what he's doing and how far he's hitting it. If you take that out of the scenario, just hear me out here on this, take the weight gain and the strength out of the scenario for 1 second and look at how much harder he's swinging at the golf ball than the way that he swang at it in the past. That alone is going to equate to more distance. He's swinging so hard that his entire left leg, knee, and left foot go from being closed to completely spitting out on his heel and being open, because if he didn't do that, he would blow his knee out. So risk there,
sure.
I suppose, if that ever doesn't move, there's definitely going to be a risk there. So the formula with Bryson, as it is with a lot of things, is more complex than just what meets the eye, which is that physical change in his shape and what he's doing in the gymnasium, what he's doing with this massive consumption of calories on a daily basis. He is swinging incredibly hard. To swing that hard is a credit to his, what he calls his one plane swing, because when you swing that hard, particularly when you have to have that much torsional stress going left, it tends to shut the club face down for two reasons. One, the shaft starts to bow forward. You know how when you pull a bow and arrow back and the bow is bowing towards you?
Mm-hmm.
A shaft will tend to start to bow the opposite direction when you're swinging that hard. When it bows that opposite direction, you also get torsional force on the club head, which means the club head and face starts to close like a doorway. As a result, your ball tends to start left and go left, which means the face angle is left, which is going to push the ball on a leftward direction, but the face is also torquing closed at the same time, which is going to put a spin on the ball that is from right to left, which is going to add to it. So the thing to watch with Bryson is that when the stress really starts to surround him, which will be fascinating next week at the PGA Championship in particular, is does Bryson start to lose the ball left? If he's starting to lose the ball left, then what he's losing there is his timing coming into the golf ball and not staying square with the club face and body rotation at impact so that he can hit it these tremendous distances, because he tends to be playing a right-to-left shape on the golf ball anyway. If he can control that, both with what I was saying with how hard he's swinging at the golf ball, and that's a credit to his golf swing, add to it the 26-year-oldness, which is, in my opinion, which is the changing the physical form and wanting to be the biggest guy in the room, which I think in many ways, a kid who we see bravado in, a kid that we see great confidence in, also have the insecurities that go with young men that oftentimes manifest themselves in the former. I think it's going to be a fascinating thing to see it play out.
Oh, I think he's just a fascinating study. He is so compelling to watch and to hear, you know, him talk about, you know, the scientific aspects of his swing and the game overall. But are you suggesting he's swinging so hard that that aspect of his improvement with his distance is really not related to his weight gain?
Yes. I'm suggesting that it's both. But but a part of it that's not getting the credit and the exposure that it deserves is his golf swing is so his own, and it is so on point right now that he is swinging so incredibly hard that he's able to maintain the flight of that golf ball on his desired target. When that starts to lose itself is when pressure starts to mount, most of the players start to lose their feel on the small muscle movement. And that's when you see someone getting a little bit off. Even you can see it manifest like not this week, but last with Richie Werenski, where in that final round, his body started getting very fast, which is we see very typically in the best in the world when the nerves start to kick in. You see it in little ways, which Bryson has had, has sometimes putts beautifully and sometimes doesn't. Lee Trevino used to say that when the stress starts to come on, right-handed putters tend to miss short and right. That's another thing. These are all the little things that, you know, on the inside when we're broadcasting events live, when I'm on course doing live play-by-play, these are the things that I'm watching for. The pace and the tempo of the swing, the physical manifestation of what they're doing with the golf club in hand in that heat of the moment, and how does it change from when they're at the absolute pinnacle of who they are. So, yeah, I think that Bryson's gains in distance are not only about gains in the gymnasium and gains in terms of pounds. It's also in terms of gains in terms of how hard he is swinging. Does one aid the other? Obviously, yes, it does. But he would have greater distance even if he didn't put on more weight because of the way that he's ripping at the golf ball.
That's a great observation. Everybody's talking about the weight gain, but I think that the hardness of the swing, as you mentioned, is really more responsible for this distance. Well, Matt, thank you so much. We could go on and on. I have so many more questions, so we'll have to do a part two.
I loved it. I'm honored to do it. I love what you have done. You know that. I've been a fan for years and years and years, and long may it continue, and I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much. Matt Adams, host, analyst, NBC Golf Channel. Sports Interview with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Dune Jewelry and my Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for men and women. Dune Jewelry, D-U-N-E Jewelry.com. And by Peak Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, unmatched clarity. Change your game, peakvision.com.